Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Eco Money on Money FM 89.3, where we bring you the latest in sustainability and finance. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, data and disclosure. Investors and regulators have called for a higher degree of standardization and harmonization of both when it comes to ESG. Data and disclosure, often a common source of frustration and inconsistencies for ESG integration strategies among asset owners and managers and investors. Transparency is really key when it comes to tackling issues such as greenwashing. And it looks like this will be one of the key themes for 2022, that is, an improvement in disclosure. To find out what else we should look out for when it comes to ESG in the year ahead, we're joined now by Neka Chikaobe, Director of ESG Research at Fitch. So Neka, let's start off and talk about funding, financing and transition. What are some of the key issues there?
You know, we have a concept about the orderly transition, mm-hmm. and it's something that a lot of governments are very concerned about. So obviously we know that climate change is a serious risk. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy in some ways to make a pledge at a summit because everybody is committed to agreeing on trying to fix this environmental issue. The problem for governments is they are going to potentially face political resistance because some of the green initiatives, as you say, actually do have an effect on people, and it can have a negative effect. So if we take the coal sector, you know, there are a number of states, for example, in the US, where this transition away from coal use has had a serious economic effect on the communities that relied on those industries. And at the same time, you also have renewable energy projects. They are clearly better from a carbon emissions perspective, but they can also have an effect on communities. If you take the example of onshore wind, there are numerous cases and examples around the world where onshore wind projects are fiercely resisted by communities because of the effect on the physical landscape and the visual impact as well. And you also have things like agricultural producers will be affected by onshore wind farms and asked to relocate and move their production somewhere else. So it's not as easy to simply say, okay, we're going to increase the amount of green energy we have, because that has an effect on a lot of people. There's also the just transition concept, which is around trying to find a way to provide financial support to the workers in the communities who kind of lose out economically from the shift away from coal and fossil fuels to new technologies. There has been an initiative just around COP26, all of the major regional development banks, so including the Asian Development Bank, African Development Bank, et cetera, made a commitment to increase the focus on just transition. Mm. I think in our region, this is really important as well, because our region is, you know, is a huge percentage of the world's population is here. But access to power is access to an improved livelihood. It's not just, you know, you want energy because it's a nice to have. It's a need to have if you want to contribute in the modern economy. And so shifting dramatically away from coal, which is readily available and fairly cheap in Asia, relatively speaking, could really affect people's economic development. And so trying to balance those two things is a tricky walk. So I think what we can see within the bond market is there's been some initiatives to increase the discussion around just transition, and even to encourage people who issue green bonds to build just transition language and even just transition financing within the bond. So you wouldn't have to do, you know, a sustainability bond or a different type of structure, but actually trying to find a way within the green bond to allocate some of the proceeds towards some of the potential social you know, incidental effects of that financing. And I think that language is really going to grow given what we saw at COP26. I think a lot of governments are going to really try to support that, and that would filter in through to the private sector as well.
And this ties in as well with the UN Environment Programme Adaption Gap report that highlighted that 72% of countries have also adopted national climate adaption plans. But you know, as you mentioned, financing needed to implement these plans is not growing quickly enough. So how do you see this shifting as well? You've mentioned the bond space, but what else is happening?
Yeah, so I think that if we're going to talk about the bond space for adaptation, it's really going to be an important role for the sovereigns and for the development banks. Mm-hmm. We did a report with our sovereign credit analyst did a report talking about the impact on sovereign issuers of climate change. And what they found was that of the 15 countries that are at most risk of increased flooding, extreme weather and storms, 10 of those countries are in Asia. Singapore is on the list, as is Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand, China, India, Indonesia. These are massive population centers, massive economic centers as well. And so getting that capital into helping deal with the physical risk of climate changes is essential. Adaptation, and the reason that adaptation financing is so far behind is that the mitigation financing, which is the capital that's needed to help us reduce the amount of carbon emissions in the atmosphere, that was needed because we want to stop the temperature rise in line with the Paris Agreement. But adaptation, which is dealing with the physical risks that are already happening, as I mentioned, is disproportionately affecting emerging markets and particularly Asia. And so what's happened is when you're having conversations, the developed economies who are the emitters are focusing on their contribution to the problem. And the effect of the problem is maybe being felt by countries that have less economic power in these major summits. And so there's been now kind of a reinvigoration where they want to get this $100 billion per year of capital transfer from the developed world to the emerging world. They have committed to do that by 2022. The problem is that if you actually look into the estimates, you know, UN and the World Bank have done some analysis here, the actual amount of money that's needed in the developing world is significantly larger. Some estimates have it from $150 to $300 billion per year, not 100. So the bond market is going to be a very important part of it, but it's well beyond the role of any kind of individual company. And so what we're expecting to see is a lot more activity from Asian sovereign issuers, and also from the development banks like the World Bank and also the Asian Development Bank, Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, to get active into this area. And that's going to be the way to transfer the capital from the developed world to the emerging markets, through these bond issuances as part of it. We can have those institutional investors that I've spoken about that are taking sustainability more seriously, investing in those bonds and helping to support the initiatives here.
Okay, Nneka, so what else are you going to be looking out for in the year ahead? I know we've covered quite a bit.
Sure, a really important issue that we're also keeping on our ESG trends is sustainability disclosures and the developments that we've seen here around the world to really increase the quality of sustainability reporting. What the goal is at the moment is to really try to bring sustainability disclosures to the level of quality we see in financial reporting. And so in the same way that you can read a financial report and understand what profit and EBITDA mean, that is what the sustainability community is looking for within annual sustainability reporting. And the reason this is so necessary is that we have now within the investment space, so many new products, new funds that are saying that they're climate-oriented funds, sustainability funds, environment funds, but it is very difficult for individual investors to really know if those labels are actually meeting the description that they're given. And so this is increasing the necessity for the investors to also have clear sustainability data from their portfolio companies so that they can say, yes, this is a sustainability oriented portfolio because all of these companies have meet these certain standards. And so the disclosures need to come from the bottom up to kind of address this issue in the sustainable finance market where it's a little bit of a black box. And so I think the launch of the ISSB, which is the International Sustainability Standards Board, that was announced at COP26, we're really interested to see that. It is going to incorporate some existing reporting standards that are focused on financial materiality. And that is certainly what we as analysts and investors as well, who are in the finance space, are looking for. Not just a report on what is the impact this company has on the environment or society, but what are the material issues? So what are the issues where if you don't perform at a certain expectation level, it's going to affect your bottom line? Because otherwise, the rest is a little bit of a nice to have. But when we're talking about people putting their pensions or or retirement funds based on sustainability characteristics, we need to know that those characteristics are going to affect the bottom line and potentially affect the performance of the asset.
We've been speaking with Nneka Chikaobi, Director of ESG Research at Fitch. You're listening to Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.